unmistakable residue for those with senses to perceive it.
A six-fingered hand emerged from the sludge, the grimy fingers extremely long.
Would you take my hand?
Kendra recoiled. I'd rather not. The elongated fingers rippled.
Please, Kendra, I must get a sense of you. The horn will protect you from my touch. It is why I asked you to bring it.
Can't we just talk?
There are other ways to communicate besides speech. Just take my hand for a moment. Don't be afraid. I promise not to hurt you. Do I appear so hideous?
My brother got burned making a deal with a demon, Kendra said. People I loved died.
No deals,
Jubaya asserted.
Just a conversation. I wish to help you.
Why would you want to help me?
I will tell you after you take my hand. Don't be afraid. Don't be squeamish.
Kendra didn't like the idea of touching the demon, but she didn't want to be rude, and it was clear the conversation would not progress unless she relented. Bracken would not like it, she felt, but how big of a deal could it be? Was she just being prejudiced? She had the horn and could strike if the demon attacked. If Jubaya wanted, she could lunge at her right now. Instead, the demon waited, hand extended. Kendra stepped forward, bent down, and shook cool fingers that felt like raw hot dogs. The contact gave her shivers. She let go and wiped her hand on her jeans.
Ah,
Jubaya said, her hand disappearing into the pool.
Much better. Why did you not strike me with the unicorn horn? You had my hand. You could have destroyed me.
Kendra felt off balance. I don't want to destroy you.
But you could have,
Jubaya said.
I am a threat and a problem to your friends. You have personal reasons to mistrust demons. I have caused discord and strife throughout my long years. You made no oath to spare me.
I don't go around killing people, Kendra said.
And yet you killed the Demon King.
He was attacking, Kendra said. I was protecting my friends.
You are not ruthless, Kendra,
Jubaya said.
It's an endearing weakness. We are fundamentally different, you and I. We do not view the world the same way. We do not employ the same methods. If at any moment in my life I could have killed Gorgrog, I would have done it without hesitation. My approach to life has particular strengths and weaknesses, as does yours. You used Vasilis to slay my king, the Sword of Light and Darkness.
How do you know? Kendra wondered.
When we touched, I saw much that you have seen. Your mind is well protected. I needed voluntary contact for a glimpse. After you killed Gorgrog, you could have claimed his crown. You could have attempted to become the Demon Queen. Why did you abandon the crown to Ouroguro?
No reason, really. Taking it never crossed my mind.
We are so profoundly different, Kendra. That was one of the five major crowns. You could have become one of the most powerful women in history.
I don't really get what you're talking about. Major crowns?
The Demon King, the Fairy Queen, the King of Dragons, the Queen of Giants, and the Under King. The five great monarchs. You could have been one of them. Any regrets?
Not really, Kendra said. She thought about it. I wouldn't want to be the Demon Queen.
But the power.
Besides, some other demon would have probably killed me. Jubaya nodded.
Yes, On that point, at least, we share common ground. Self-preservation. And you're right. My kind would have eaten you alive had you attempted to rule them.
Orogoro is the new king, Kendra said.
Indeed. Ruling from a new prison. How very majestic.
You didn't leave with the other demons, Kendra said.
And so I am in a position to help tidy up the mess they left behind,
Jubias said.
Rushing forward at every opportunity is not always the wisest tactic. Are any of those who departed talking to the slayer of the Demon King?
No.
You asked why I wanted to take your hand. Demons view the world differently than you do. Let me allow you a glimpse. To a demon, all the world is a chessboard, an elaborate game with so many pieces, a game that can be won. Most of the pieces are virtually irrelevant, but some are important. You, Kendra, are an important piece.
Me? Jubaya gave a slow, rich laugh.
I adore the innocence. Kendra, some would argue that the most valuable pieces in the entire game are the five monarchs. You destroyed one of them, and earned the trust of another, and you befriended the insecure son of a third.
Raxtus, Kendra said. He had been there at the battle against the demons with his father, Celebrant, king of the dragons. How much had Jubaya seen?
Are the monarchs the most essential pieces, Kendra? Or the pieces that alter the destinies of the monarchs?
I don't know, Kendra said.
And yet you bend the world with your will,
Jubaya murmured.
We truly are different, Kendra Marie Sorensen. I wish I better understood some of what you don't know.
Is that what you wanted to tell me?
No. Why do you imagine I desired to speak with you?
Well, if you think I'm important, I guess to use me somehow? Jubaya bobbed her head.
So you do understand something about demons. How do you imagine most demons will view you after you killed their king?
I thought they would hate me, Kendra said. But it sounds like they might also admire me.
Right on both counts,
Jubaya said.
Would you rather every demon in existence wanted you dead? Or would you prefer to have every demon in existence impressed by you and supporting you?
That seems obvious.
The emotions to drive reactions in either direction are present. Knowing what you know of demons, do you expect they are happy about their defeat? Do you suppose they rejoice that a new age of demonic rule was thwarted?
No.
What do you imagine they want?
Revenge. Jubaya chittered.
Exactly. The question becomes whom they will target. You killed the Demon King. It was a pivotal moment of the battle. But what is the main reason the demons went to the fairy realm instead of spreading across the world?
The dragons?
That should not be a question. Demons and dragons have an ancient rivalry. If world domination is a game, the Battle of Zizix created a major shift in the balance of power.
What can the dragons do? Kendra asked. They went back to their sanctuary.
Yes, they did,
Jubaya agreed.
But armed with new power. Heed my words, Kendra Marie Sorensen. I have studied world events for many millennia. A new age of dragons is about to dawn, and there are few who will be ready or willing to stop them.
How does that affect me?
Would you like to see dragons take over the world?
No.
Who else do you suppose would like to see the dragons fail?
Kendra finally realized where Jubaya was going. The demons.
Now you're seeing it.
You want to help me stop the dragons?
Without the backing of the dragons, you would not have stopped the demons. Should you end up fighting the dragons, most demons will see you as an ally and view the fall of Gorgrog through more generous eyes.
Why would I fight dragons? Kendra had barely survived her brief stay at Wormroost, the dragon sanctuary. Some of the worst experiences of her life had happened there. Dragons were enormous and virtually unstoppable. The last thing she wanted to do was become their most wanted enemy.
Perhaps you will not, Jubaya said. But if you do, help might be found from three demons, Talazar, Batusa, and Vezradim. They could be of great service to you and to your brother.
My brother?
You are very kind. There are some limits to the assistance they could offer you. But Seth is a shadow charmer.
The last thing Seth needs is new demon friends, Kendra said heatedly.
He was betrayed by Growlithe, Jubaya said. I wish I could say I was surprised, but interacting with demons can be a more profitable experience when you share common interests. Demons have a score to settle with the dragons. You could receive help from the sources I named. With my mark on you, they will look upon you favorably.
Your mark? Kendra asked. She had worried there might be a catch to all of this.
I shared it when we touched. It will cause you no harm, and only demons can see it. My approval will be a protection and will open doors for you.
What if I don't want to go through your doors?
Then don't,
Jubaya said.
I wished to converse with you. We have conversed. If a day comes when you could use help, remember our talk. Or forget it. That choice is yours.
Okay, Kendra said, once again wiping against her jeans the hand that had touched Jubaya.
Go tell your unicorn that I will now submit quietly.
Thanks.
Your gratitude is premature. Don't thank me yet. The day may come when you actually mean it.
Chapter 5. Visitors.
It's good to be back,
Doran said as the SUV slowed to a stop in front of a large house with lots of gables and a lone turret.
Really?
Newell replied.
No more fast food hamburgers, no more curly fries, no more tacos or milkshakes or gas station nachos.
Doran inhaled deeply.
I'll miss the food and the open road, but you're forgetting something very special.
Newell knocked the heel of his hand against the side of his head.
Forgive me, Doran. Lapse of reason. Maybe those witches Seth visited put me under a spell. How could I forget our brand new television? Nothing tops it.
Seth laughed at his friends. Men from the waist up, goats from the waist down, the satyrs had received a big-screen television as a reward for helping Seth find Vasilis and for their contributions during the Battle of Zizix. It was a major step up from the battery-powered portable TV they had been using.
I had hoped that after enough television, the novelty would wear off, Grandpa Sorensen said.
Stan, Doran said. We're not talking about some superficial association. Our relationship with that television only deepens as the months go by.
Does a novelty wear off when you find true love? Newell asked.
or does your devotion increase over a lifetime of commitment and sacrifice?
We learned that from television, actually,
Doran inserted.
Right, a talk show, Newell agreed. That television lets us explore the world, become infatuated with a million faces, witness art and music and technological marvels.
And watch cartoons, Doran crowed.
Grandpa Sorensen exhaled through pursed lips.
Just be careful. Some humans who watch too much TV turn into couch potatoes. Try not to forget about forests and streams and the thrill of chasing living, breathing nymphs.
Newell winced.
Ouch. I suppose we have been a little off our game lately.
We'll get back to it as soon as we catch up on the programs we recorded,
Doran promised. The satyrs unbuckled their seatbelts and rushed out of the car. Seth reached for his door.
One moment, Seth,
Grandpa said.
Sure, what?
I didn't want to bring it up in front of the satyrs, Grandpa said, but we haven't had a chance to discuss your visit with the sisters.
Seth squirmed in his seat.
I have to be careful. People aren't supposed to know about our arrangement. Bad things can happen if I say too much.
I understand, Grandpa said, but it's a long way from Missouri to Connecticut, and you've seemed preoccupied for most of the drive. I expected that having settled your business, you would be relieved.
Well, things are not completely settled, Seth said. There is another part to the agreement.
Some fire entered Grandpa's gaze.
Have they asked you to do something that makes you uncomfortable?
No, it's not the arrangement, Seth replied. Not that I could tell you if it was. They really will do something drastic if I say too much. They almost came after me just because Bracken mentally spied enough to discover an agreement existed.
If the upsetting information isn't part of the arrangement, can't you talk about it?
Seth thought about that.
Yeah, I guess I can. It was just a prediction they leaked. They said a storm is coming. A storm of dragons.
Grandpa's expression grew sober and a little guarded.
Did they?
You know something.
Just rumors, Grandpa said. Nothing definitive. But there has been unrest at the dragon sanctuaries lately. Agad the wizard recently told me to expect a visit. I expect I'll learn more then.
Really? I'd like to see Agad again.
I'm sure he'd like to see you too.
There isn't much the dragons can do from their sanctuaries, is there?
I hope not, Grandpa said. Dragons embody the greatest threat posed to humans by the magical community. I don't want to worry you, but if there's anything I have learned over the past few years, it is that prisons can fail, and magical preserves can fall. We have to stay vigilant. Look, there's your sister.
Kendra emerged from the front door of the house. She waved when she caught Seth's eye.
I should go see her, Seth said. She was worried about me.
Go on.
Seth got out of the SUV and jogged over to his older sister.
How'd it go?
Kendra asked.
It's all top secret, Seth replied. You have one fewer wraith than when you left.
At least I still have you. Kendra gave a patient smile.
Vasilis has gone too?
Seth scowled.
Yeah.
It was fun while it lasted.
Fun for you, hogging all the glory by killing Gorgrog.
You found the sword and took out some other demons. It was a team effort.
I call the next one.
You can have him, Kendra said.
She paused, looking at him closely.
Are you all right?
Mostly, Seth said. It sounds like we might have some trouble from the dragons.
Says who?
I can't really get specific.
The witches, Kendra said. A demon just told me something similar.
Wait, a demon? Seth asked.
Here at Fablehaven?
I went to the fairy realm.
Bracken finally took you.
No, I snuck in, Kendra said dryly.
Were there lollipop forests and candy bar roads? There were lots of flowers. Rainbows, sparkles. It was beautiful. How did you meet a demon there? Was it made of gumdrops?
Some demons never left, Kendra said. The Astrids are working to expel them.
I knew I got rid of Vasilis too early.
Bracken wouldn't want to endanger you.
I could have been a demon exterminator. Seth's eyes widened. Is that why he wanted me to settle up with the witches? To protect me from having fun? How much did he know about our deal?
I really don't know.
What did the demon tell you about the dragons?
She wanted to warn me there would be trouble, Kendra said.
It was a lady demon?
I think she mostly wants revenge against the dragons. I bet a lot of demons feel that way. Who knows how accurate she is?
A black minivan was coming up the driveway. Seth stared, baffled. Fablehaven almost never got visitors. The sighting of a strange vehicle was a rare occurrence.
Who is that?
Seth asked, wondering if it could possibly be Agad. Kendra started laughing.
Nobody told you?
What?
You're going to love this. Grandma and Grandpa Larson invited them.
Who?
Your favorite cousins.
No,
Seth said. He didn't want to speak the name, but couldn't stop himself.
Nox?
Kendra nodded.
And Tess?
The minivan had almost reached the house.
No,
Seth groaned.
This is our place. He'll ruin it.
Don't be so dramatic. You usually end up having fun with him. He can't ruin anything, but your attitude might.
Why would they invite him?
Uncle Pete and Aunt Zola wanted to take a trip. Grandma Sorensen wanted me to remind you that we're not supposed to tell them about any of the magical stuff.
Of course not. I'm not stupid.
That's debatable.
The minivan rolled to a stop beside the SUV. A door slid open, and a kid hopped out wearing fancy basketball shoes, baggy sports shorts, and a gray t-shirt. His blondish hair was shaved short on the sides but fairly long on top. A pair of military-style dog tags dangled from his neck, and he carried a basketball under one arm. It had been 3 years since Seth last saw him. Not quite as tall as Seth, and a little stocky, Knox looked like an aged-up version of the kid Seth remembered.
"Hey, loser," Knox greeted. "You still have Seth breath?"
Seth held his nose.
"It was killed by your Knox socks."
Knox shook his head.
"I hear you live here."
"For now," Seth said.
"Do you have enough trees?"
"It's called a forest," Seth said.
"Hi, Kendra," Knox said. "Did you get shorter?"
"I think you got taller," she replied.
"How old are you now?" Knox asked.
15.
"I'm 13, like Seth," Knox reminded her.
"I know," Kendra replied. "You were born the same month."
"I came first," Seth said.
"First is the worst," Knox countered.
He looked around. "So many trees.
Connecticut needs to share the wealth.
They block every view. We couldn't see anything driving here."
"Some people think the trees are part of the view," Seth said. Over by the minivan, Grandma and Grandpa Sorensen stood talking to Uncle Pete and Aunt Zola. Uncle Pete looked a little heavier than Seth recalled.
"You didn't drive from Texas," Kendra said.
"No way," Knox said. "We flew into Hartford and rented the minivan. Mom and Dad are going to drive around New England with your parents for a week and look at old stuff. And I'm stuck here."
He kept looking around.
"Do you have a basketball hoop?"
"Nope," Seth said.
"Really? You're not just scared to play me?"
"Truly. Is that basketball signed?"
Knox held it up and pointed out different signatures.
"Magic, Kobe, Jordan, LeBron, Curry.
Each name looked like it had been written with a real marker.
Are you serious? That must be worth a ton.
Knox bounced it on the grass.
Maybe. I didn't buy it. It's all about being in the right place at the right time.
You met them? Seth asked.
Or people I know did, Knox said, bouncing the ball again.
I wouldn't bounce it, Seth said. You should keep that one on a shelf.
I disagree, Knox said. It'll look cooler all worn out. A ball that gets used.
A petite blonde girl trotted up to them, her shoulder-length hair softly curled. She wore fairy wings and carried a white wand with a star at the tip. Kendra and Seth shot a look at each other.
Hi, guys, the girl said. Remember me? I'm your cousin Tess.
You look so much bigger, Kendra said.
I am bigger. I turned 9 last week.
You came in fairy gear, Seth observed.
I love fairies, Tess twirled. Grandma Larson told me this is a perfect place for fairies. She called it Fablehaven. Get it? Fable Haven. A safe place for storybook creatures.
I bet she's right, Kendra said sweetly. Grandma Larson is pretty smart.
Looks more like a great place for bugs, Knox said, scanning the area.
Seth could currently see at least 10 fairies flitting about the yard. They were so much a part of the scenery that he hardly noticed them anymore. But of course Knox and Tess were blind to them. They saw butterflies and dragonflies instead. Mortals needed to drink milk from the magical milk cow, Viola, in order to perceive what was really going on at Fablehaven. Seth had eaten walrus butter from a similar creature every morning on his road trip, so he could see Newell and Doran as they really were, instead of as a couple of goats.
Butterflies, Tess announced, pointing at a fairy. I bet they know where I can find the fairies.
Seth and Kendra shared another glance. Tess could have no idea how close she was to getting her wish.
No hoop, Knox grumbled, bouncing his ball again. This could be a long week.
Do you guys have video games at least?
Grandpa Sorensen isn't big on electronics, Seth said.
Knox looked like he had been shot.
That's right. Your other grandparents are here too. Isn't that kind of crowded?
They have different houses, Kendra said. You'll probably be in the old manor mostly with Grandma and Grandpa Larson. It looks like a mansion.
That sounds decent, Knox said. Is it nearby?
It's kind of far, Seth said. They own a lot of land here, acres and acres.
Anything cool? Knox asked. Or just trees?
There might be a few surprises, Seth said. You have to be careful. The woods can be hazardous. Grandpa will fill you in.
Hazardous? Knox asked. Like those signs on the way in? Certain death awaits? Give me a break.
The woods can be deadly, Kendra said. Poisonous snakes, lots of ticks with Lyme disease.
Knox made a disgusted face.
I hate bugs.
Old bear traps in the woods, too, Seth said. Some parts are like a minefield.
That sounds scary, Tess said.
And fairies, too, Kendra said. So many fairies.
Tessa beamed and waved her wand. Knox gave a huff.
Right. Fairies and unicorns and leprechauns.
More or less, Seth said.
And no basketball hoop, Knox said with a sigh. I have a feeling this might be the most boring week of my life.
Chapter 6. The Tiny Hero. Seth awoke the next morning to find a mouse squatting on his nightstand. The little creature sat upright, nose twitching, and began to squeak. Seth continued to use one of the beds in the attic playroom while Kendra had moved into an empty bedroom on the next floor down. Though the playroom was large and cluttered with enough toys to hide 100 mice, Seth had never seen a rodent inside the house.
You're not a mouse, Seth said.
The furry intruder waved both arms and kept squeaking. The only wild mice Seth ever glimpsed had scurried away at the sight of a human. This one was clearly signaling him.
Sit tight, Seth said. I'll be right back.
He hurried down the attic stairs. The mouse was just an illusion. Seth needed some supernatural dairy. Sometimes he envied Kendra's ability to see magical creatures as they really were without drinking Viola's milk. Grandma Sorensen stood at the stove tending a large pot of oatmeal, her graying hair bound in a large bun.
Good morning, Grandma,
Seth said, grabbing milk from the refrigerator.
Good morning, Grandma said. Your cousins and the Larsons are coming to breakfast.
Seth poured some milk into a glass. Oatmeal had never been a favorite of his until he had eaten it at Fablehaven. Grandma Sorensen always offered lots of tasty toppings.
We'll have extras to put in it?
Grandma smiled.
We have honey, brown sugar, cinnamon, almond slivers, sunflower seeds, walnuts, bananas, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, and boysenberries. Plus, homemade bread with my special jam.
That should keep them from running away, Seth said, then finished the milk in his glass.
You really do spoil us.
It's one of my fundamental rights as a grandparent, Grandma said. I'm saving the pancakes and French toast for later in the week.
Good finale, Seth said. Don't forget the huevos rancheros.
Or the heavenly hash, Grandma said.
Seth put the milk bottle back in the fridge.
See you in a bit.
Is everything all right? Grandma asked. You seem in a rush.
Should have gone to the bathroom first, Seth said, racing off.
He swung by the bathroom on his way to the attic, partly so his statement would be true, and partly because the claim had awakened an urgent need. When Seth entered the attic playroom, he found a little man waiting on his nightstand where the mouse had been. Proportioned like a normal human, the tiny fellow stood not quite 3 inches tall. He had black hair and blue eyes, and he wore a dark yellow shirt tucked into brown pants. A little sword hung at his side. His boots looked travel-worn. Seth knelt down beside the nightstand.
"Hi there," he said. "Sorry I rushed off. I had to drink some milk to see your true form."
"Understood," the visitor replied in a squeaky voice. "You are Seth Sorensen, correct?"
"Who's asking?" Seth wondered. "What are you?"
The little guy didn't fit the profile of any of the creatures Seth knew. Though fairy-sized, he had no wings and was male. He didn't look like a brownie or a leprechaun either. The diminutive man bowed.
"I'm Calvin of the Nipsies."
"You're too big," Seth said. "Nipsies are like..."
He put his finger and thumb about half an inch apart.
"Good eye," Calvin said. "I wondered whether you would realize I was out of scale with the rest of my kind."
"I've been to the 7 kingdoms of the Nipsies," Seth said.
"I know," Calvin said. "Along with the supreme gigantic overlords, Newell and Doran. You three are hard to miss."
"I guess so," Seth said, remembering how easily they could have smashed the elaborate cities full of miniature buildings, bridges, monuments, palaces, ships, and people. "Why are you so big?"
"The elders cast a spell on me," Calvin said. "Among the Nipsies, I have a reputation as an adventurer. I hate to toot my own horn. It always sounds hollow. I should have brought letters of recommendation. But anyway, they chose me as their champion and used a spell that turned me into the giant hero. Well, to them, I look like a giant. Seems silly in front of you. Maybe you should call me the tiny hero."
"Calvin, the tiny hero," Seth said. "That works. Did they send you to fight me?"
Calvin laughed and shook his head.
"No, you are Seth."
"Yeah?"
"Slayer of the Lord of Filth."
"I've killed some gross things."
"You destroyed the foulest of the foul." The Curse Bringer?
Probably, Seth said. Does he have a name?
We don't enjoy the taste of it,
Calvin said.
The Demon Growlus.
Yeah, I killed him, Seth said. I wish I could have done it more than once.
We rejoiced at the news,
Calvin said.
We had begun to worry nobody would ever slay him.
He was almost dead for a long time, Seth said, not wanting to mention that he had healed the demon before killing him later.
Which is why we were concerned,
Calvin said.
Because of the curse.
What curse?
The terrible curse of the Nipsies,
Calvin said.
It was placed on us long ago, before I was born.
What did it do? Seth asked.
The details are obscure,
Calvin said.
The elders refused to elaborate, but we used to be more powerful and bigger. Maybe even as big as I am now.
Enormous, Seth teased. Calvin scowled.
Hey, it makes a difference to us.
I get it. So did the Nipsey elders somehow remove the curse from you?
No, but they had ancient magic to create a giant champion. I was chosen.
What does the curse have to do with Growlus? Seth asked.
A deal with Growlus led to the curse,
Calvin said. I believe that, Seth said. He pretended to help me, then stabbed me in the back. He overthrew Fablehaven and killed my friend Coulter.
The curse came with a prophecy,
Calvin said. Tell me.
All Nipsies can recite it. The curse arose from the demon's blight. The lord who slays him will set it right.
It rhymes, Seth observed.
Most of the good ones do,
Calvin said.
Some strain more than others, but the basics are clear. Whoever kills the horrible demon will help lift the curse.
I slayed that horrible demon, Seth said.
Thank goodness,
Calvin cried.
If the foulest of the foul had died from a disease, who would we turn to?
I'm supposed to break the curse?
With the help of a Nipsey champion. There's a second half. The slayer shall restore our pride, the giant hero at his side.
Calvin drew his sword, dropped to one knee, held out the blade with the point downward, and bowed his head.
I, Calvin, son of Brendan, pledge myself to you, Seth Sorensen. From this day forward, I am your vassal, keeper of your secrets, protector of your honor, servant to your interests, and defender of your causes.
Wow, thanks. I'm still not clear on this curse, let alone how to break it. With his head still bowed, Calvin said,
Nobody is really clear about it, but if you're willing to help, please accept my devotion.
Aren't you kind of small? Seth asked.
You're small compared to a giant,
Calvin replied, glancing up at Seth, though his head remained mostly bowed.
And compared to Growlus, you did all right against him. There is more to me than my size.
But what if you get squished? Seth exclaimed. I'd feel awful.
I'm tougher than I look. It's all part of the champion spell, stronger than I look, too. Let me worry about the risks. I don't squish easily. You won't regret it. Little people can come in handy. I knew I should have brought some letters of recommendation.
Okay, Seth said. I'll help with the curse.
Try to be a little more specific. I'm offering my devotion. This is a dramatic moment. Very ceremonial. Something like, Rise, tiny hero, and join your new liege lord.
Seth swallowed. This means I'm responsible for you? Still kneeling, Calvin lifted his head a little more.
It just means you accept my service. We're a team, and you're the leader. It'll be fun! I'll help you with anything you need, and we'll also keep an eye out for ways to break the curse on the Nipsies.
Seth paused. The little guy seemed eager and fun, but he didn't want this to lead to trouble. How did you get in here? The house is shielded from intruders.
Being tiny has advantages. In this case, the brownies helped me out. With brownie permission, anyone smaller than a brownie can gain access to the house using the brownie passageways.
That's impressive. My sister and I got in that way once. Long story. How do I know you're not an evil spy?
I'm a Nipsey, Calvin said defensively. We've never allied with evil. The Shadow Plague turned some of us dark for a while, but that wasn't our fault. You can count on me. Go check with our elders, or ask your grandfather. I pledge to serve you faithfully, with an oath and everything.
Rise, tiny hero, Seth said, doing his best to make the word sound official. I believe you. I'll be your partner. Calvin hopped to his feet, swung his sword, then sheathed it.
You won't regret it. Should I call you Supreme Gigantic Overlord?
No, Seth said. The satyrs made up that title. I wasn't part of it.
Master?
How about Seth?
Very well, Seth. Want to carry me in a pocket for now?
Really?
Why not? I'll be fine. That way I'll be with you if you need help.
Seth was currently in shorts and a t-shirt. Okay, let me get dressed for the day. Grandpa and Grandma Larson brought Knox and Tess to join Grandpa and Grandma Sorensen, Kendra, and Seth for breakfast. They all gathered around the table, a big bowl of oatmeal waiting at each place. Bread, butter, and jam occupied the center of the table, along with the many add-ins for the oatmeal. Knox eyed the bowl of oatmeal with a mix of suspicion and disappointment.
"Thanks for coming over for breakfast," Grandma Sorensen said. "We're happy to have Knox and Tess visiting."
"How was your first night?"
Grandpa Sorensen asked.
"Wonderful," Tess enthused. Though she had shed her fairy wings for breakfast, she still wore a tiara.
"Fablehaven is a magical place."
Knox snorted.
"I don't know about that, but the other house is pretty sweet."
Seth wanted to say that he should have seen it before the brownies fixed it up. The manor had been abandoned for years before Grandpa Sorensen invited a group of brownies to take up residence there and repair it for the Larsons. But of course, Knox didn't know that brownies were real.
"Dig in,"
Grandma Sorensen invited. Knox looked down at his oatmeal without excitement.
"Add stuff," Seth prompted, spooning in some sugar. "It can get amazing."
"There's warm bread, too," Grandma invited.
Knox's interest increased as he sweetened up his oatmeal with berries and sugar. Seth snuck little pieces of bread to Calvin, who was hiding in the front pocket of his cargo pants.
"You don't have a basketball hoop anywhere?"
Knox asked as he finished his food.
"We could maybe rig one up," Grandpa Sorensen said. "For now, why not let Seth show you around outside? We have a pool here, and a great yard to explore."
"I want to catch some fairies,"
Tess declared. "I can help," Kendra offered with a nervous smile. Seth wondered what would happen if Tess drank the milk. He figured either it would be no surprise at all, or it would completely blow her mind.
"I'm done,"
Knox announced, blotting his lips with a napkin.
"That was the best oatmeal I've ever had. It usually tastes like mud."
"I'll take that as a compliment," Grandma Sorensen said.
"Grandpa Larson reviewed the rules with you two?"
Grandpa Sorensen checked.
"Stay out of the woods because of ticks," Knox said. "No problem. I'm not a big fan of trees. Or bugs."
"I'll stay by the flowers," Tess promised.
"Run along," Grandma Larson said. "I can see you're ready to go."
The kids left the table. Seth followed Knox out the back door. He might be annoying, but he was still company.
"What are we going to do?"
Knox groaned. I can show you the yard, Seth offered.
I can see the yard, Nox said, gesturing at it. Lots of bushes, tons of grass. What are you going to do, tell me the names of all the flowers?
This is the most boring place on Earth.
It's actually not, Seth said.
Right,
Nox said with a huff.
Prove it.
Seth had seldom felt so tempted. He had called Fablehaven boring plenty of times, but hearing it from somebody else made him defensive. What if he gave Nox a sip of Viola's milk, then snuck him down to the dungeon? He could introduce him to the goblins, maybe release a wraith or two. Wraiths were the opposite of boring.
Look at your sister, Seth said.
Tess was running around a rosebush, waving her wand while Kendra tried to keep up with her.
She's having a great time.
She thinks she's having fun, Nox said. Tess tries to make everything into a storybook. She believes anything you tell her. Once she got stuck on the idea of fairies being here, she was all set.
Tess lives up in the clouds. One of these days, she's going to be really disappointed.
Are you sure? Seth asked. What if there really are fairies here?
Nox stared.
You have to be kidding. That is the lamest thing I've ever heard. Maybe you should go play with Tess.
Seth knew he needed to proceed with caution. Yes, there were fairies at Fablehaven, and so many other amazing things. And yes, Grandma and Grandpa Larson probably had some interest in sharing those secrets with Nox and Tess, or they wouldn't have let them come here. But Seth knew he would be in huge trouble if he showed Nox what was really going on. Grandpa Sorensen had pulled him aside yesterday and insisted Nox and Tess needed to figure out the secrets of Fablehaven on their own.
What if I told you there were demons here? Seth asked. Or monsters, or treasure.
At least that would be interesting, Nox said, but still dumb. Except the treasure. I wouldn't mind some treasure.
Suddenly, Seth had an idea. It would require taking Nox into the woods, but it shouldn't be very dangerous. Not for Nox. Since he didn't know about the magical creatures, the treaty would protect him.
How about a dare? Seth challenged.
I like dares, Nox said hesitantly.
We'd have to go into the woods.
What about...
I have bug spray. I go into the woods all the time, and I've never seen a snake there. I'll show you cool stuff, and I'll give you $10 if you do the dare.
Nox grinned.
You've got a deal.
Chapter 7. Steal the Bacon. The cottage where the satyrs spent most of their time had been wired for power. As Seth and Nox approached, Seth could hear the rumble of the television, probably a war show or a superhero movie. It sounded like things were blowing up.
Could you wait here for a second? Seth asked Nox.
Why can't I come in?
This house isn't what it looks like. A couple of goats live here.
Goats? This is way too nice for goats.
Maybe, Seth said, but Grandpa Sorensen is using it to hold them. They can be temperamental around visitors. Let me go see what kind of mood they're in. Make sure they've been fed.
Why?
Nox asked.
Do you have food in that bag?
Seth patted the leather satchel he was carrying.
Not goat food, just granola bars and some emergency gear in case of trouble. There's some goat food stored inside the cottage.
I don't want to wait around all day collecting mosquito bites, Nox said.
Seth took some insect repellent from his emergency kit. Nox closed his eyes and turned his head as Seth sprayed him thoroughly.
That stuff reeks worse than your breath, Nox complained.
Let's hope the mosquitoes agree, Seth said. Be right back.
Seth let himself in, closing the door quickly. Newell and Doran sat on a couch watching superheroes do battle.
Seth!
Doran greeted.
You're just in time for the big showdown!
Pause it, Seth said.
Newell took the remote, waited for a moment,
then froze the screen with a car in mid-explosion.
"Nice one," Doran said.
"What's up?"
Newell asked. "Remember the duffel bag we lost near the ogre's place?" Seth asked. Of their adventures following the Battle of Zizix, the bungled ogre robbery had been one of their biggest disappointments. Newell wiped a hand down his face.
"Are you trying to torture me? I think about it all the time. That was way too much treasure to leave behind."
"It was my fault," Doran said. "You made a good throw. I choked."
"It wasn't a perfect throw," Newell said. "It was a little behind you. You needed to slow down a step and turn. But yeah, you pretty much blew it."
"I would have gone back, but she was right behind me,"
Doran apologized.
I know, Newell said. "We've gone over this. It was a flawless operation up to that point. Easy money. But you may as well forget it, Seth. The ogres left the bag right where it fell. Which means they're using it as bait, waiting for us to come back so they can nab us. I know it's alluring. Treasure is treasure. But it would be foolish to go back for it."
"Unless the Shadow Charmer wants to sneak it away in the dark,"
Doran suggested. Newell elbowed Doran.
"Shadow Charmer or not, Seth isn't going to steal a watched prize from an ogre. That's a sure recipe for Shadow Charmer stew."
"What if I found somebody who would get it for us?" Seth asked.
"Is anybody that foolish?"
Doran asked.
"Verl, maybe?"
"It's not worth getting Verl killed," Newell said. "We still wouldn't get the treasure."
"Not Verl," Seth said. "What about a kid? A human kid? Somebody who doesn't even know what's going on here at Fablehaven. He has never drunk the milk. Shouldn't the treaty give him a bunch of protection?"
"He would still be trespassing,"
piped a little voice.
"Who said that?"
Doran asked, looking around.
"Was it my conscience?"
"I have a new friend," Seth announced, taking Calvin from his pocket. "A Nipsey. He's Calvin, the tiny hero."
"That's quite a Nipsey," Newell said.
"What have you been feeding him?" "I was enlarged by a spell,"
Calvin replied.
"But I'm no supreme gigantic overlord."
Doran blushed a little.
"Sorry about all that. I know we used our size to extort some goods from you Nipsies. A guy's got to eat."
"Don't apologize," Newell groused.
He looked Seth in the eye.
"Why are you carrying around a giant Nipsey?"
"He wants me to help him break a curse," Seth said. "He pledged his loyalty to me." Newell laughed.
"What's he going to do? Bring you a peanut? Fend off some butterflies?"
"I might point out that trespassing can forfeit the protection of the treaty,"
Calvin said.
"Sometimes," Seth said.
"But remember, he has never tried the milk. And what if I tell him to go there? Then he would be trespassing with permission. He'd be following orders instead of breaking a rule." Calvin scowled in thought.
"I don't know. That might work."
"Not a bad scheme,"
Newell seconded, finally sounding interested.
"If it goes wrong, worst thing that happens is the kid gets smooshed. How much do you like him?"
"Not a lot," Seth replied. "He's my cousin, though. I can't let him get hurt."
"So you want us along for protection?"
Doran said.
"We get away with dangerous stuff all the time," Seth said. "We could still split the treasure three ways." "Won't the kid get a share?"
Newell asked.
"He's doing it for $10.
Newell and Doran tried to hold in their laughter, but mostly failed.
"How dumb is this kid?"
Doran asked.
"Pretty dumb," Seth replied. "But keep in mind, he doesn't know what Fablehaven is like. He'll just think he's doing a dare."
Newell turned off the television.
"This I've got to see. It's hard to beat really good live entertainment."
"It's a higher fidelity experience," Doran agreed.
"But you have to help me make sure nothing happens to him,"
Seth reminded them.
"That's your end of the deal. If the kid dies, we lose our share of the treasure."
Newell said.
But we get an even better show,
Doran whispered with a wink. He must not die, Seth said. He's pretty annoying, but technically he's family.
What kind of treasure is in the bag?
Calvin asked.
Gold, mostly, Doran said. Some uncut gemstones, a string of pearls. We lured the ogres away from home and snatched some loot.
They got back a little too soon, Newell said.
You robbed their house?
Calvin asked.
It was all treasure they had stolen, Doran said. Fair game to take unless they catch us trespassing.
Which they did, Seth said.
Once we were off their land, they couldn't follow, Newell said. We almost got away with the goods. You can see the bag from the border of their territory.
At least we could last time we checked.
They could have moved it, Doran said.
I don't know, Newell replied. We only pinched the treasure a few weeks ago. It's hardly been a fortnight since we checked the bag. Once an ogre gets an idea, it tends to linger. Not a lot of competition, if you know what I mean. I bet they're still hoping to spring their trap.
So you're in? Seth checked.
We're in, Newell said. But the pipsqueak is out, Doran clarified. We split the loot three ways.
Fine by me, Calvin agreed. I'm here as an observer and as Seth's champion.
You get what you pay for, Newell muttered.
Perfect, Seth said. Come meet Knox.
Like Fort Knox? Doran asked.
Isn't that full of gold?
Newell wondered.
That's a good omen, Doran said.
To him, you'll look like goats, Seth said. I'll have to be careful how I talk to you, or I'll look nuts.
Better hide your pet Nipsey, too, Newell said. What does it look like to blind humans? A ladybug?
A mouse, Seth said. He's right, Calvin. You should duck out of sight.
No problem, Calvin replied as Seth put him back in his pocket.
Doran grabbed his bow, and Newell picked up a coil of rope. Seth went to the door and led the satyrs outside. Knox stood chucking rocks into the trees. He turned, brushing off his hands.
There really were goats,
Knox said, looking at the satyrs in surprise.
They're going to come with us into the woods, Seth said.
Why? Knox said.
The kid seems suspicious,
Doran said.
Maybe he's a good judge of character, Newell said.
Do I need a reason? Seth asked.
You complained about being bored. I thought bringing some goats would make it less boring.
I guess, Knox said, eyeing the satyrs hesitantly.
Are they safe? I'm not sure I trust them.
He is a good judge of character,
Newell exclaimed.
Why do they keep bawing? Knox asked. Do they bite?
Not people, Seth said.
Don't they need leashes?
Knox wondered.
They're really smart, Seth assured him. They'll stay with us.
Unless you get in trouble,
Doran said.
Then good luck,
Newell added. Knox edged toward them, one tentative hand held out.
Is he going to pet us? Newell asked.
Can I pet one? Knox asked.
He better not, Doran said, backing away.
Why not? Seth wondered.
Imagine some kid wanted to pet you, Newell said. It's creepy.
Knox took the why not as permission and reached out. Newell lifted a leg and let Knox rub it. Then the satyr hopped away and Knox flinched back.
Feeling jumpy? Seth asked.
It jumped first, Knox said.
Think they have fleas?
Probably best not to pet them, Seth said. They can be a little ornery. That one is called Newell. The other is Doran.
Weird pets, Knox said.
It's a weird place, Seth said with a shrug.
Come on.
He led the way into the woods. They found the duffel bag right where Doran had dropped it, partly hidden by shin-high grass in a small clearing. The satyrs had shown Seth exactly where the ogre's territory began,
and they stood beside a tree just outside the boundary, staring at their reward less than 30 yards away.
"I don't get it," Nox said. "I just go grab the